morning, everyone. How is everyone post Derby Day? Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Post Derby Day, the first service, wasn't a lot of people here. It's like, oh, they partied a little too much last night. But you are all here because you partied a little too much last night. So you are forgiven. There we go. We'll get that out of the way. Oh, goodness. Derby's always fun around here. I'm from Ohio, so this whole Derby thing is very new to me, but we had a lot of fun. So if you're new, welcome. We're going through a sermon series in the book of Daniel, and today we're with a fun one. There's a famous VeggieTales video of Shadrach and Benny, and we have finally reached that part of the book. So that's where we're at this morning. So if you could bring that up, and we'll read it. And just a forewarning, there's a lot of list on this one, so we might have to take a few breaths. So get ready, and here we go. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high and 9 feet wide and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O peoples, nations, and men of every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. Therefore, as soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all of the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up." Take a breath. At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews who you set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They never serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up." Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now when you hear the sound of horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you'll be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what god will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the god we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up." Woo! There we go. Got a little bit of a workout this morning. Didn't anyone get that this morning? That one's for free. All right, so Shadrach and Benny, exiles living in a foreign land. You know, so go back just a little bit, and like 587 BC, you have the Babylonians invade Judah, the southern state of Israel, and they completely wipe it out. And they take all the people away, and those who survive the attack are basically taken into captivity and brought into Babylon. And so basically you have Daniel and Shadrach and Benny, we'll call them the rest of the morning, so I can get out quicker. They're exiles living in a foreign land. You know, and we remember, like Brian mentioned a few weeks ago, they've had their names taken from them. Their names were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and now they've been given Babylonian names. I mean, they've lost their home, they've lost their culture, and just they've lost everything. And so basically everything has been stripped from them. You know, we maybe have a hard time identifying with that. I mean, maybe not have our names taken away. Maybe we haven't been driven from our home. I mean, so maybe we have a hard time relating to this. But, you know, if you, it's like a UK fan hanging out, moving to Indiana or something. Or, you know, for my wife and I, we're from Ohio. And so, you know, we're Buckeyes fans because we have to be, I guess. And so when we moved here, like, oh, wait a second, this is a very different land here in the state of Kentucky. Basketball is a big deal down here. And so it's kind of funny, though, but, you know, sure enough, when OSU made the championship last year, my wife was screaming at the television and waking the neighbors, and even though it was on late at night. And it's like, you know, there's this things from our home we want to hold on to. You know, wherever, maybe you're from Kentucky and you're hardcore U of L fan, or maybe you're from elsewhere and you root for wherever your respective team's from. But, you know, it's just kind of funny. There's always something about our home that we want to hold on to. You know, there's something that even if we're living somewhere where we didn't grow up, we're living in a foreign land of some sort, there's something about that we want to hold on to. So then you have here in the, oh, I forgot to open this. Sorry about that. So in the beginning of this chapter, then you have Nebuchadnezzar, who will just, I don't know, what is his name in the VeggieTales one? Anybody remember? Nezer? He's Nezer the rest of this morning. So you have Nezer, who basically sets up this golden statue in the beginning of this chapter. And a lot of interpretations say that it was a statue of himself, but it might have just very well been a Babylonian god who he favored. And he basically tells all the people in Babylon, all his subjects, all the governors, and that huge list of people to come and worship it. And they're given a real choice in the matter, right? Like, yeah, worship or be thrown into a furnace. You know, is that not really much of a choice at all, but I mean, can you really blame them for what they do? I mean, it's either you take a few minutes to dedicate this temple and bow before it and worship it, or you get thrown into a furnace. And can we really blame? I mean, of course, they all fall down and decide to worship it, and can we really blame them? I mean, when, you know, push comes to shove and we're forced to make a decision about our life, you know, we're probably going to elect to keep living. So, I mean, we can't. So he uses this kind of force and coercion to say, you will worship this. It doesn't give him much of a choice in the matter. There really is no alternative there. You worship this statue. You observe the Babylonian gods. You worship the gods of this culture, or that's it. You'll perish. You'll be put to death. So then all of a sudden we have these other kind of rabble-rousers, if you will. You know, again, there's this kind of turn-or-burn mentality, quite literally in this case. You know, worship this idol or you will be thrown into a furnace. But then we have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, a few chapters before they had been appointed, but they're, even though they're foreigners, Nebuchadnezzar has appointed them to his own court. He's given them a job, and in his mind, he's been good to them. You know, I mean, they're not from here, but he's given them a very respectable position within the empire. And so all of a sudden, when he starts to catch wind that they've refused to bow before the statue, he's kind of a little understandably angry. I mean, he's been good to them. But, I mean, but again, for them, you got to remember, for the Jewish people, the very first commandment is to worship, have no other gods before me, worship no other god. So to bow before the statues, to violate the very first commandment, to basically spit in the face of their God and say, we will no longer be faithful to you. So of course they can't do it. And they, again, they've lost everything. They lost their home, even their names, but they decide they will not lose their God. So if you remember last week when Brian was teaching, we had this group of astrologers, or Chaldeans is the other word in some other translation, to Nezer had decided to bring before him to interpret a dream that he had that rather disturbed him, and they're unable to do it. And no one could do this thing. And then Daniel comes up and interprets the dream, and basically what ends up happening is there's a little bit of professional jealousy going on here. That, like, who are these foreigners to come in and take our job? Now, who are they to come in and take this away from us? And so eventually they go and they kind of rat him out and say, hey, you know, these people basically disobeyed a direct order. They're not worshiping the statue you set up. And Nebuchadnezzar, you know, he should maybe let him off the hook, right? It's not that big a deal. I mean, they've already proved useful, and, you know, they've already conformed to a lot. They've taken our names. They live here. I mean, not a big deal if they keep worshiping their God, right? I mean, nope, he's angry. There is no alternative here. Now, how dare they refuse to worship the God and the statue he has put in place? So Nebuchadnezzar brings him up, and there's a bit of a showdown. Now, he decides to give him one last chance. He's like, I hear that you refuse to worship the statue I've set up, and what's that all about? And then he said, I'll give you one last chance. If you submit, if you give me your loyalty and submit before this God here, then I won't throw you into the fire, and everything will be fine. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, good punk rockers that they are, said, no, we are not going to submit before your God. You know, again, they've lost everything, but they will not lose their God. They will not let anyone else take this away from them. You know, and the funny thing in this whole situation is they're not blind to this situation here. They tell Nebuchadnezzar, if we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it. And he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Boom. There we go. You kind of feel that in your gut there. It's like kind of that kind of stick it to the man kind of a mentality. And I don't know. I'm a nerd like that. That's how I read scripture. So it's just amazing here that, and Nebuchadnezzar, you know, you should be impressed by this, right? I mean, what resolve, right? But no, he decides, if we've read the story, we know that he goes through his plan, throws into the furnace. And the thing is, they're not blind to their situation when you look in this verse here. They know that their God is more than capable of saving them from this situation. They remember what God has done for their ancestors by bringing them up out of Egypt and freeing them from another foreign power from Pharaoh in Egypt. They remember what all the mighty things that God has done throughout their history. And they know that God is more than capable of saving them from the situation. But they even admit here, but even if he does not, we know we will not serve your gods. They expect that God is more than capable of showing up, but he might not. And that's life, isn't it? You know, there's so many times where we know that God is capable of doing amazing, mighty things. I mean, God has brought healing to people. God has freed people of addictions. And yet there are times where it seems like God doesn't show up. Now, and the amazing thing here is that even if they know that God doesn't come through for them, they still will not worship Nebuchadnezzar's gods. They still will not turn their back on their God and lose the God who has done so much for them. What do we do with this? I mean, they trust that even though God can save them, will God show up? Will God abandon them to the flames? Will God come through for them? You know, I think that it's interesting that within this story, you know, within the book of Daniel, they assume that there are other gods present. You know, there are the gods of Babylon, and so often we're monotheists. We say there's one God, but sometimes there's so many other gods even today competing for our loyalty and attention. So if you don't mind, let's have a little bit of a moment. Reach into your wallet and pull out a dollar bill if you have one. And if you don't have one, turn to your neighbor and say, can I borrow a dollar? Don't worry, this isn't your tithe or nothing. It's just an example. So when you get your dollar, you turn it to the back. And on the back there, it says something. In God we trust. It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny within the culture wars. We always debate, like, oh, we'll keep it on our money. This is an important phrase that has been to us throughout history. But you know, let's think beyond that. We say in God we trust. What God are we talking about exactly on this bill? I don't see a cross or a Christian God or a Bible. What God are we talking about? And we've always learned about other sorts of gods. I mean, we studied Greek mythology and learned about Zeus and all of them. And there's all these other kind of little gods. And within the book of Daniel, they don't assert that God's the only God throughout the book. They say there are all sorts of gods out there competing for your attention. But the thing that Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach want us to to know is that their God is the Most High God. This is the God that is above all other gods. This is the God who shows up when things are just falling apart. So I kind of wonder in our own time and place today, what God do we trust in? And I kind of wonder, is this our God? Do we trust in our jobs, our bank account, our social status? Or do we trust in our accomplishments? What is it that we turn to when life seems to be falling apart? What is it, what or who do we turn to when we just have nothing else to turn to? When we've lost everything else, who do we turn to? Let me invite the worship team back. Oh, you're already there. So this morning I asked us to wrestle and to reflect a little bit on who or what do you turn to when life seems to be falling apart? At the end of the day, who has your undivided trust and loyalty? At the end of the day, who are you willing to say, I will not submit before other gods? This, I will not turn my back on this God. Who or what do we ultimately place our trust in? Let's continue to worship. This time we'll dismiss our kids at Revolution Kids Church. So let's lead them all as they go upstairs and learn. So how does the story end? We know what happens. Shadrach and Vinny are unfortunately thrown into the fire. Is that the end of their story? In the fire, what happens? It's kind of funny, as far as Nebuchadnezzar, you know, he kind of turns things up. He's furious. He heats up the fires even hotter than usual. And, you know, you have some of the soldiers who take Shadrach and Vinny up there to throw them into the fire. All of a sudden, they start to die because it's just so hot, and he just throws them in. And as far as he knows, that's the end of their story. But then all of a sudden, he's kind of surprised because he looks, and all of a sudden, we find that, you know, there's three people he threw in, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he looks in, and he notices that there appears to be someone else walking around with him. There appears to be a fourth figure walking around, and he's like, it looks like someone like the son of the gods or has an appearance of a god. Some of the translations differ here because it's just kind of hard to know, who is this person? As far as we know, it was maybe an angel that God sent to walk with them, but for some reason, there's something mysterious about this person. They don't know who it is, but there is someone walking with them throughout the flames. You know, he can do math. He's a king and has all these armies, but so he knows that he's not just seeing things. There are four people walking throughout the fire. And then all of a sudden, he changes his tune. He's like, he brings them out and says, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way. Like something amazing and just miraculous has happened here. God has shown up in a mighty way. We find that even Nebuchadnezzar, who just a few minutes before thrown him in the furnace and been forcing people to bow before his statue, all of a sudden he cannot deny what this God has done. This God is a God who is above all other gods. This is the Most High God. Most High. There we go. The Most High. Thank you, brother. But the funny thing is, what happens? It seems to me in this story that Nebuchadnezzar doesn't really learn his lesson. You know, earlier on in the chapter, he says, you know, turn or burn, repent or worship this statue or else. And he's kind of doing it again, except with this time, the God of Daniel, the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He says, worship this God or be cut into pieces and your houses be turned into piles of rubble. But is this what their God is like? Is this the God who shows up in the middle of the fire? Is this the God who rescues them when it seems like all hope is lost? And it seems like to me that what's funny here is Nebuchadnezzar still doesn't quite get it. He still doesn't quite know that this isn't a God who forces us to love him or follow him. This is a God who is faithful and pursues us and draws us in close to him, but gives us an honest choice. Do we follow him or not? Not turn or burn, but will we follow him? Will we follow this faithful God? And the good news throughout this story is that God has not abandoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. even though they're in a foreign land, had everything taken away from them. They trust that God is still with them. God is still present with them and continues to be faithful toward them. He rescues them from certain death. We find that this God is a God who shows up in the midst of defeat. This is a God who offers hope when it seems as though all hope is lost. This is a God who shows up when we've lost everything that is dear to us. This is a God who shows up when life just seems to be falling apart. This is a God who is worthy of all honor, glory, and praise. There we go. Amen. I'm just getting warmed up. You know, I think this last week has been brutal, to be honest with you. This has been a tough week for Taylor and I. On Monday, I get a call that my cousin, who I haven't seen in 5 or 6 years, unfortunately died of a drug overdose. And it's like one of those calls where you're expecting it to come sooner or later, but you still kind of hope they'll get better. And so that happens. Then we go about a week, and then on Friday we get a call that a very close friend to us back home has died of cancer that she'd been fighting for a month. And we're just like, God, where are you at in all this? You know, to be honest with you, God has seemed rather distant this week, and I've wondered, God, where are you at in the midst of all of this just pain? You know, where are you at in all this? Like, couldn't you have freed my cousin of his drug addiction? Couldn't you have healed our friend Michelle of her cancer? Like, God, where are you in all of this? And the funny thing is that when you're in the middle of the fires, you're in the middle of just these trials and struggles and difficulties, and it's hard to see God, but yet there's someone walking with us. There's someone that is walking with us throughout the fires and the flames. And the funny thing is that God always sends those people who we really need at the moments we need them the most. I mean, this week, Tim and I are very fortunate. We have a group of friends at the seminary who we call our tribal council, who meet every Friday night at 10 o'clock. And it's been just so life-giving to us because that time we just air everything out. I mean, a lot of us this past year have struggled with, you know, disappointments and job prospects, and just, you know, we've all lost someone dear to us. And it's just through that, I can just imagine just how unbearable this week would have been if we did not have them this last Friday. And we're also spoiled because even this, we have our small group on Sunday nights, who is also very much the same thing. So we get a double dose each week. But I just find that if it wouldn't have been for these people in this last year in particular, that this last year would have been unbearable. And that sometimes God shows up throughout all this, and we find that we are not walking alone. There's nothing worse than to have to just walk through life, just let having all these things happen and just have to deal with it by yourself. I mean, it can just be brutal. But what we find in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's case is that they're thrown into this furnace, and it looks like all hope is lost. It looks like that they have been defeated, but that they're not walking alone. That they have someone is walking with them, and God is still present with them and walking with them out through the most difficult of times. And I want you to know that we here as a church, if you're going through something just difficult right now, that you do not have to walk through it alone. Like, we as a church, we're your family. We're here for you. And in particular, if you need to connect with a small group so you just get this kind of experience more often, then come talk to me or Travis, and we'll get y'all hooked up with a group. So just please know that you do not have to walk through the most difficult of times alone. God has not abandoned you, but is present with us, even in the most difficult of times. The funny thing at the very end, that Nebuchadnezzar, even though he doesn't still quite get it, doesn't still quite know what's going on, you know, he can't deny again what God's done. You just see God's grace reaching out even to Nebuchadnezzar in this instant. You find that God is faithful and still present with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that he has not given up on them, but is still present. But at the same time, his grace even reaches out to Nebuchadnezzar, someone who's apparently opposes him and has no interest in worshiping him. But even Nebuchadnezzar cannot deny what God has done. No one is too far gone or outside the reach of God's love and grace. So this morning, if you're feeling that way, that just somehow you've done something in your life that God can't forgive you from, or that God treats you like a lost cause, please know that that is not, that couldn't be further from the truth. God pursues all people and loves all people, wants to draw them to himself. God, this is the God who shows up when all other gods or idols that our culture has to offer us have failed. This is the God we turn to when everything else has fallen apart. This is a God whom we can trust in and who we can give our loyalty to. At the very end of his life, John Wesley, the founder of the Methodist movement. Apparently, it said that his very last words were, "The best of all is God with us. God is with us. The best of all, God is with us." Saying this on his deathbed. And I think that that's just something that just really resonates with me. That no matter what life has to throw at you, no matter how brutal my life may seem to be, that God is with us. We are not alone. Thanks be to God. And you know, when we come around this table, you know, this is a place where we recognize that life isn't meant to be lived alone. This is a place where we come and recognize each week that Christ calls a community of people to be his disciples. Not individuals off being superheroes and doing their own thing, but community. So this morning, know that you are welcome to this table. You don't have to be a member of this church or any church. You are welcome. You are not alone. We have a creed, if we could bring that up as we move into communion. If you could say this with me, we are not alone. We live in God's world. We believe in God who has created and is creating, who has come in Jesus, the Word made flesh, to reconcile and make new, who works in us and others by the Spirit. We trust in God. We are called to be the church, to celebrate God's presence, to live with respect in creation, to love and serve others, to seek justice and resist evil, to proclaim Jesus crucified and risen, our judge and our hope. In life, in death, in life beyond death, God is with us. We're not alone. Thanks be to God. Would you pray with me?